pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. So we'll start with our first session of public comment, where anybody can speak to any item that is relevant to the agenda. Anybody wishing to speak?
If I may, it's really not public comment, but it's not on your agenda. Joe Iser, Chief Health Officer, Southern Nevada Health District, and it's not on your agenda. Normally, we would do acknowledgments for the regular board meeting, but we don't generally do it for here. But in the back is Amy Hagen, who is our new HR director. She started on December 28th and has already been whipping us into shape, and I just wanted to take the opportunity to introduce her to you. So.
Very good. Welcome.
Welcome aboard.
All right. No other public comment, then we'll close that and go to take a motion to adopt today's agenda.
So move.
Got a second?
Second.
All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? None are opposed. And we'll go to item number 5, which is the consent agenda. And we would approve the minutes from the advisory board on October 9. I've taken a look, and that does seem to fully reflect what we spoke about. If anybody has any other comments, or I think there was a copy of them on the table if you want to take a look. Otherwise, whenever you're ready, we'll take a motion to accept.
So move.
Second.
All in favor of accepting the minutes as written for October 9, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? None are opposed. And we'll move on to item number 6. And this is report, discussion, action, and discuss and approve the Southern Nevada District Board of Health nominations of officers from the October 26, 2017 meeting. And as you might recall, we've had some discussion as to who would be our officers for this advisory board, sent that recommendation to the main board, and the main board has come back with some alternate recommendations. Maybe Dr. Iser could kind of fill us in on that discussion.
Sure, if I may, I'll tell you what the process was, is that we provided the regular Board of Health with your nominations, and initially they accepted them and then reopened the item. Chris June Kelliani reopened the item and then recommended that Mr. Collins be named the chair of this Board of Health and that Mr. McDowell be the vice chair. And then that item passed, and so that's what you have here is their recommendations. So you as a board can choose to accept those recommendations and move forward, or you can choose to send back to the regular Board of Health anything that you want me to take back for you.
Was there discussion and general discussions about their decision?
There really wasn't. I think, and I'm doing this from memory, but I believe that Mr. Collins was brought up because of his nursing background and working in the public sector. And Mr. McDowell, I think they just liked you. I'm not quite sure beyond that what the discussion was, but I don't recall it being much more than that. Ms. Wells, do you recall anything? That's about the gist of it.
Well,
it didn't last very long.
I'm looking at the minutes now. And initially, they had approved, and as you just stated, they rescinded that.
Can you use the microphone?
With the vote, and the second vote seemed pretty strong as it passed with 5-3. So we can discuss it. We can talk about it. But if we want to send something back to them, we obviously can. I don't have a problem with serving as vice chair. I don't have a problem with it at all, unless you all do. Michael?
I move we accept their recommendation.
Yeah, I agree. I think it would be best, since we do serve as the advisory board to the board, that whatever they recommend in terms of participation at this board is what we should probably go with.
So. You hold for a second. I'm having trouble hearing you, and part of it is because I've got this white hair, white ears, and not very good hearing. So, Mr. Collins, would you just say something as a test?
Can Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes, okay. And so, and I apologize for intervening, but Dr. Osgood made a motion right before you spoke, Mr. Collins, to accept the board's, the regular board's recommendations. And I turn it back to you, Mr. Chair.
Any other comments?
Well, I have a comment. I mean, I'm not opposed to these two at all representing us, but I am opposed to their, for the comment that you're saying that because they're the advisory board, that we should have to accept theirs. I don't buy that, but I'm just saying, I certainly have no opposition to y'all serving.
My understanding of this board, this advisory board, is this is an advisory board to the Board of Health, and that the members are selected by the Board of Health to serve.
No. If I may, and I apologize this, but this was added into how we function, the legislature before last.
Yeah.
And the way that occurred is that they decided, the legislature decided, not the Board of Health, that they wanted an advisory board. And so the way that they, that the legislature defined the advisory board was that the three members, you're one of them, and Dr. Osgood and Mr. Jones are the other two, who used to be on the regular board would now be on, and in the positions that you fill, would now be on the advisory board, and then each city was allowed to choose its own representative. So in essence, for this existing board now, our board didn't make those decisions. The three of you were defined to continue on, and then the cities chose the other five of you. Now, going forward in the future, what would happen, and in fact, this year, it would be the roughly kind of elected positions that would be recommended by the cities to come forward, and then in the subsequent year, the appointed folks would then go back to the Board of Health to be reappointed or to have competition if they wanted to. I apologize for that, but it's just kind of a nuance in the change of how this happened and then how we're going forward.
And Dr. Osgood, if I can add to that in reference to NRS regarding this board, you have three individuals representing, as you stated, medical field. Each other individual that is, if you were appointed to this board, is from the city, City of Las Vegas, City of Boulder City, City of North Las Vegas,
correct,
and so on, Mesquite. Okay, and that's what those that are not in the medical field represent.
The five of you.
Yes.
And I was just pointing out that I stated it the opposite. The three appointeds would be reappointed this year, and so as it would be for the regular board for those three appointeds. So we'll be going out, and I'm going to have to look at Ms. Wells in March or April.
The application period will be from April 1st to April 30th, and that will apply to Mr. Collins, Mr. Klein, and Dr. Osgood.
So back to my original.
I think it's Mr. Jones, isn't it?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Mr. Jones.
So back to my original. Thanks for the clarification. But going forward, a portion of this board will be, actually all of this board will be appointed by the board itself. The individual members of the board that are from various metropolitan areas will choose a person from the metropolitan area. And the applicants will be looked at by the entire board and selected by the board.
That's correct.
Therefore,
those are the appointeds.
Therefore, my comment that since we do serve at the pleasure of the board, I think it would be wise to go along with their recommendation.
Well, I would just comment that I think both Juan and Michael are excellent choices to go forward with this board. I've been happy to serve as the chair.
Can we swear?
Would be happy if you ever chose for me to do that going into the future, but I think it's a good experience for other people to get on board with that. I would like to make one point of correction that in listening to the minutes of that main board meeting, they seem to have represented me as a consultant. And today I am not a consultant. I'm just an ordinary citizen. In the past, I had been an employee of MGM Resorts International, and never did serve as a consultant for anybody other than my employment with MGM Resorts. So I would just like the record to be clear that I am representing the public. I'm not representing any business or entity or anything in any other manner.
And I didn't research this, but I believe that in the old board, you were the environmental representative, isn't that correct?
That's correct.
And so you,
my appointment here.
And so your appointment on this board is as a representative of the environmental community, however that's defined.
Right.
Mr. Collins is a representative of the nursing community, and Dr. Osgood is a representative of the medical community as defined under NRS.
Any other comments? We have a motion on the floor, and I assume that both Laquan and Michael are accepting of moving on to new appointments. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Right. So any further comment?
I need a second.
I'll second that then. So going forward, motion to have new board members, Michael Collins as chair and Laquan McDowell as vice chair. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? None are opposed. And that is our new officers of the board.
And now, sir, you would transfer the gavel over to Mr. Collins. And we here at the selected people at the district appreciate your willingness to serve. You know how grateful I have been in the past of your help on the regular board and on this board. So if I may just take a minute to say thank you for all of the service that you've done. And it's very sincere. I remember back about 3 years ago when we had sort of an impasse between the board and I think it was a septic applicant and program here, and you helped us to develop that win-win situation that was recommended by you, approved by or endorsed by our staff, agreed to by the applicant, and finally approved by the board. And I saw us in a sticky situation that you really led us through and led the regular board through. So that's just one example that sticks in my mind because I was relatively new at the time and I thought, how are we going to get out of this now? And you found the way out, so thank you. And of course, Mr. Collins and Dr. Osgood, both of you have served for longer than I have here in the district. I believe in your representative roles, you were one of the regular board members, and I think you were the backup for a while, and then you were a regular board member in the nursing category. There was Mitchell.
I was a regular board member, then I was a backup board member.
There you go.
Then I was a regular board member.
And now you're advisory board. And I remember Dr. Winchell being the regular when you were here. So for the two of you, too, and it's not to not appreciate everyone else's roles, but we may be seeing this transition occurring as people go on and off this board. And this is just an opportunity for me to say thank you to especially all three of you and to Mr. Collins for your willingness to serve. And Mr. McDowell, you know, you and I have a great relationship, so I appreciate your willingness to serve too. I've said too much. Mr. Collins, back to you.
Okay, let's just go forward with item number two of six of the consent decree or the consent agenda, review and discuss the status of accreditation.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
All right, give me a minute just to find my notes here. Okay, so this is a screenshot of the EFAB website reflecting all of the domains that we have worked on. Anywhere you see green means that those are completely uploaded. Those are finished and ready for submission once Dr. Iser gives his okay. There's a couple of areas that are in white, and those are areas that are currently in progress, one of which is the update to our strategic plan that I should have finished by the end of today or tomorrow. We have our performance management plan, which is being worked on, and the last two are, we have a health equity policy that the district has not had before, so that is actually going to be a draft policy pending review from our committee. And the very last one is an HR notation that essentially demonstrates our HR department has the ability to provide specific assistance to the district in their hiring.
What's the red one?
The red one means we haven't actually started that upload. We actually, that's our performance management plan. And up to this point, we have not had one. So we're drafting it completely from scratch. So it's in process and it will be ready by the end of this week.
And what, can you just kind of outline what the performance management plan is in a capsule?
Actually, what I will do is, to answer that question, I'm going to have Jim come up. He's actually our new quality and performance management coordinator. We call him our QPM for short. Or, he can probably speak to that.
Or if you can wait till item three comes up, I think Mr. Oste will be giving you that particular, more detail,
yes,
on that particular item in just,
okay,
a minute.
Okay, so this is just a representation of sort of when we started back in January. And the chart is a little bit deceiving because what it does is it actually shows you from the very beginning, it looks like it's a pretty consistent growth curve, and it's not. What actually happened, I took over in May for the accreditation when the previous coordinator left. From January till May, what happened was the gathering of documents that already existed or were readily available. So that was pretty much employees pulling from what they had current or documents that had been created previously. What happened in May was that we realized there was a significant number of documents that did not exist or were not written down. So a large part of accreditation is demonstrating how the district carries out its business. And up until that point, those procedures were not codified. They existed and were followed. They were just not documented. So the majority of the work has happened between May and now. And we are actually, we're almost ready to go, but we just wanted to point out that most of the down in the trenches work has happened within the last 6 to 9 months on the project. Right. So this is just a review of our numbers. So that's 329 unique submissions. And what that means when we say submissions, those can include multiple documents in one upload. So it encompasses thousands of pages. Every one of those pages has been reviewed by at least three people. We have two document reviewers and then me. So I've looked at every single one of those pages before they've been uploaded. And we have actually, we've only uploaded since December 15th. What we actually decided to do was wait until we had everything ready to go and then start uploading once everything was completed. So all of our documents come from all over the district, all of the different departments. So it has very much been a group effort. Okay, so I was asked to include some budget numbers for you. This goes back to the beginning of the project, so it spans multiple fiscal years. We have a consultant that we hired, which is the Public Health Institute. What they've done is primarily help us review our documents to ensure that they are in line and that we will meet the FAB standards. Having not done that before, and we felt that that would be, excuse me, we felt that a consultant who had previously been through the accreditation process would be much more able to let us know where we were failing, where we needed a little bit more help to get those documents in line. So we've used about half the budget that we had set aside for that consultant, which is pretty good. We expect to try and use the rest of that budget to do a site visit, because what happens is once we submit our documents, FAB will actually send a team of people here to the district. So what we hope to do is use that budget with Tamara Bannon, our consultant, to come here and kind of do a walkthrough of what that site visit will look like so that our employees, when the site visitors come, don't feel quite so nervous. They kind of know what to expect. Okay. So personnel costs from the start of the project, January 2017. So you can see there, it's $112,926.31. That does include the salary for the previous accreditation coordinator, as well as the staff who have billed to the accreditation code. Travel, which includes trainee fee and air travel to Virginia for the FAB training, which they require. And our operating costs, which include the application fee that was paid directly to FAB, and then our consultant, mileage, printing, etc.
And looking at your personnel costs, those are people that have other job assignments, generally speaking, and they've spent some time on this project. So that's not set aside as direct employee.
Correct. Correct. The salary, or excuse me, the salary for the previous accreditation coordinator was included in that from her January until I believe she left in officially in May. So that in large part was her salary for that those few months. If employees were using the billing code that we set up, then they were paid from that accreditation fund. So that's what's included in there.
I'll just add a tiny bit to that, is that when we do special projects, and you will know of some of those. Ebola is one of those. Zika is another one that we don't have a place to charge to. We try to keep track of what those costs are. So accreditation is one of those, because I think it's important for you and anyone else who wants to know how much it costs us. So what is the cost-benefit ratio? And we can talk about that towards the end of this presentation. But I think it's in all transparency, we want everyone to know what these things cost us that aren't in a grant program somewhere. Sometimes we do get grants, and I can recall back when I was up in Washoe County that this district got a grant from
NACHO.
Mm-hmm. And so part of that grant was to travel me and it was Marina Works from Carson City at the time down here to watch some of the process go through the CHOCHIP and so on. So there have been some grant dollars that have been applied to this. I think we don't have anything currently supporting us through a grant right now.
We just wanted you guys to see what our upload pages look like for the EFAB website. So this is from Domain 11, and it has five required documentations. So even in one domain, one area, we're uploading five separate documents. We just wanted to give you guys a quick review of what it looks like. So here you'll see the required documentation, and it'll say guidance. And so that's about halfway down the page. And it'll say number of examples and dated within. So what that means is that we have to submit two examples within the last 5 years of whatever the required documentation is. So in this case, it's asking for information technology infrastructure that supports public health functions. So we have to demonstrate two individual examples that are current within the last 5 years that show that functionality. So as it says, it could be a scanning system, information systems, licensing systems. That's just to kind of give you an example of the type of documentation that we had to go look for as part of accreditation. This is just required documents 2 through 5. So for example, when I said they had five individual documents that we had to go find, excuse me. So these are the remaining five required areas. Each of these only required one example. But so for 11.1.6, we actually uploaded six different documents. So these four plus two from the previous example. So as you can see, it was even for one domain, it's a pretty heavy duty project to get all of this information together. Okay, so we are actually almost done early. As I said, we have four documents that are outstanding. With all luck, we should have those done by the end of the week. So we are going to submit all of our documentation next week, June 30th. Dr. Iser has to actually be the one to push the button. So we're going to have him, as long as he's in agreement, we're going to have him push the button on January 31st. February 13th is actually our formal due date because they give you 1 year. Our challenge challenge is that we have documents that will time out because they have to be within a certain time frame. So we did not want to wait until that last day to submit. And also, just in case anything goes a little bit wrong, we wanted to make sure we had a cushion built in.
Question, is yes. the site visit unannounced?
No, they will tell us in advance when the site visit will be happening.
Somewhere in those 3 to 6 months. So when is your mock drill going to be?
It will depend on when we find out.
So you're going to wait till you find out the
yes.
date? And then
yes, because that the challenge with the site visit is that we don't know who it will be ahead of time. Once we know who it will be, we will know their areas of speciality. So, for example, we may have somebody from environmental health, we may have a quality and performance person, and we may have somebody who's from IT. So once we know that, we know where to spend the majority of our time helping to train and update our employees and make sure they're ready to go.
Question. In the process, this board was asked to do a lot of various things because I've attended a lot of stuff. And I was under the impression that when you get your site visit, they're going to want to meet with us. Is that
yes,
correct?
They will.
Give us a warning.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I want to be a surprise
points.
For you.
I know. Well, I just want to make sure I'm in town.
Yes. Yeah. And actually, part of that site visit, we actually going to incorporate members of the community as well. So we have some individuals from UNLV that we worked with on the CHAWCHIP process. So we're hoping to actually get an invite to some of our other partners as well.
Okay.
So that they
if
can come in.
If you get some pushback, give me a call.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and Dr. Osgood, bring your gloves just in case.
Yeah, right. So no, I've been through it. So, yeah.
When you say members of the community, are we just talking about our average Joe citizen, taxpaying citizen, or just like
no.
you stated UNLV?
We are actually going to invite the individuals that participated in our strategic planning, our CHAWCHIP. So, for example, we'd like to invite Dignity to come participate. We'd like to invite Southern Nevada CHIPS to come because they're a founding member of the Mobile Health Collaborative, which is one of the biggest successes to come out of the CHAWCHIP process. So they're actually the stakeholders,
okay.
not your regular average citizen.
Okay.
Okay.
And I apologize, Ms. Coker, did you have?
I just wanted to coattail him and say okay. we want some talking points.
We'll give them to
yes.
you.
Yes. Yes, we will absolutely make sure that everybody is briefed, and that's one of our points, so that you guys are aware of what's going on and can speak to the wonderfulness of the district. Okay, so as we've kind of been discussing, after our documents are submitted, we will be assigned the site visit team within 3 to 6 months, made up of 3 people. They will take a look at our documentation before they arrive. They will meet with the individuals for each domain to make sure that what we've submitted is active and current and in use. And once they've come and they've met with us, the decision regarding accreditation they'll let us know shortly after the site visit. If we are fully accredited, we will be accredited for 5 years. At that point, Southern Nevada Health District will need to apply for a reaccreditation. It's a much less onerous process than actually applying for accreditation. It's pretty straightforward. During the next 5 years, what we're actually going to be focusing on is improving our workforce development plan, quality improvement, and performance management plans. And so that's an ongoing thing. That's one of the biggest areas that has come out of accreditation is within the district creating a culture of quality and performance management on an ongoing basis. as you can see to the end, we've actually got a quality and performance management coordinator. We call him our QPM for short. He's been selected to ensure that the process continues to thrive so that we've built this and we intend to keep it going. And that is actually going to be Jim Austey, and he has been the administrative analyst for community health for a number of years. He's been at the district for a long time. So he has a lot of internal knowledge that we think will be considerably helpful in keeping this process alive and moving it forward. If we are not initially accredited, so that is a possibility, we will receive an action plan, which gives us a limited period of time to address any areas of weakness. FAB does not want anyone to be not accredited, so they will actually work with us. They indicated at the training that they prefer no one has the not accredited status. So what they will do is give us an action plan and tell us these specific areas need to be worked on, fixed, updated, so we'll know exactly what we need to fix. So that's...
Is there a timeline?
Yes, they will give us a timeline. My understanding is it's about 30 days from when we get the action plan. It is, speaking with other districts, it's really straightforward. They will give us a list of bullet points. You need to fix this, 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 and this. And they will reopen EFAB for us to upload those documents.
And I assume we will be prepared to do
yes.
that in,
yes.
in the event that does take place.
Yes. In fact, one of the things that we have done with gathering our documents, we've gathered multiple documents for one domain. So we actually have electronic copies of extras already saved in those areas. So if, for example, one does not meet the domain that they're looking for and we hear back from them, then we have other options to choose from. So the work will be pretty straightforward to just go and see what we have that will meet what they're looking for.
I have a question.
Do we know how many districts are currently accredited?
Not off the top of my head, I can get you that information. The largest number of districts that are accredited are local or tribal health districts. There's a couple of state districts, but it's primarily local and tribal health districts.
My recollection is that it's less than 20% of all of the health jurisdictions in the United States. Those are governmental health jurisdictions, of course. In our state, Carson City is accredited, but and I don't mean to say that their work wasn't useful and helpful, but they're so much smaller than us with fewer programs than what we have that their job was probably a little bit easier than what ours has been as the largest one. So we, if everything goes through, will be the second jurisdiction, the second of three locals as well as the second of four altogether with the state who will be accredited, and then close behind us probably within a year will be Washoe County and then the State Division of Public and Behavioral Health.
Okay, Dr. Osgood.
I was the same question, because when we started this process there were only
a handful
yes. nationwide.
That's correct.
It is the general trend in the public health with the local health districts to move everybody towards the accreditation process. FAB is relatively new in the history of local health districts, but they are encouraging. In fact, Ohio actually requires a number of their counties and their state health department to be accredited. So that's kind of where the shift is going to, because it involves incorporating stakeholder feedback as well as client feedback into continuing to improve your processes and service delivery.
In terms of the CHOD, does it have to be repeated in the first 5 years, or?
The way our timeline works out, the CHA went from 2016 to 2019.
Okay.
So we will need to set up a new CHA and CHIP cycle coming up in this next year. So it will be within the next five-year the reaccreditation period, but it's not on the same timeline. They're actually separate documents to accreditation. Accreditation just borrows them to demonstrate the needs of the community.
And what we've chosen to do is to try to do it on a three-year cycle. The reason for that is that hospitals have to be reaccredited on a three-year cycle. We in public health are on a five-year cycle, but if we're going to help our local hospitals, and primarily that's Dignity is the only not-for-profit, because UMC, I think, believes that they're not, they don't have to participate in the their own CHA-CHIP and strategic plan, but we'll be working with Dignity, who's been our great partner in this, to try to make sure that we can develop this. And they'll be giving us some funding to be able to do this. So going forward, I can't remember what it is, but they're giving us a couple of tens of thousands of dollars, if I recall.
I want to say it was like 10 or 20.
To help us with the CHA-CHIP and strategic plan, because they need it for their own sake.
Tell me again what FAB stands for.
It's the Public Health Accreditation Board.
Okay.
So if there are any other questions, what I would like to say is, would you go back to the chart that shows that monthly increase? So Emily has said that with all luck will be finished by the end of this week. Let me assure you, this is not luck. This is skill and dedication and hard work on behalf of many people. But but Emily Elfestawi.
Elzeftawi.
Elzeftawi. And Tanya Sutton, who is back there and will raise her hand a little bit higher, are the two that have really been leading this process for a year. And without their work and really the hard and dedicated work from all of our divisions, from our division directors who are sitting behind me, and numerous, 100 or more employees, we wouldn't have done this and we wouldn't be able to upload everything by January 31st. So I have to acknowledge my thanks to the whole team, but in particular these two who have really been shepherding us through this.
Yeah, we have, I want to say, about 112 employees across the district who have helped gather documents or review documents. Our leadership team has been fantastic in supporting us and getting us the resources that we need and the time that we need. So that means some of our department directors have had to authorize not comp time, but changes to rosters or scheduling to accommodate some of our people. So that's been tremendous in getting us to this point. So, and I would like to make sure that both Tanya and Jim do get the credit. We had a change in our team a little bit ago, and Jim stepped up to the plate and actually got us a lot of assistance on our quality and performance plan, which is one of the reasons that he is our new quality and performance management coordinator. So I'm going to have him come up and talk just briefly.
Unless there are other questions.
Nope, unless there's other questions, yes.
Well, prior to you doing that, Ms. I'm not going to butcher your
Emily.
Last
name. Emily works.
Emily, you know what I have to say? For you to come in the middle of this and take the reins and get us to where we are right now is remarkable. Thank you. And I love the fact that you just gave credit to everyone that's behind you and really didn't take any credit for yourself. So I'm putting it out there right now for you to come in, take the reins, get us to where we are ahead of schedule. Bravo to you. So thank you so much.
I appreciate that.
All right.
We'll keep her.
Sounds like you're getting a raise.
Oh, well.
She has gotten a raise this year, as well, every employee in the district.
Everybody did, not just me. So, Jim, if you want to come up real quick and kind of...
And in this transition, let me also explain that what we've had for the last couple of years is an accreditation coordinator. And Emily is acting as the accreditation coordinator, but we've had two before her who were not as efficient and skilled as what Emily is, and thank you for helping to recognize that. We're dropping that title, and then we're adding the quality and performance management title as the transition as we move forward. So you won't hear from an accreditation coordinator. Well, during this period of time, Emily is still going to be functioning in this role until we are accredited, with more time given to her regular job, thankfully. And Jim has been stepping up. So from when I told you 6 years ago when this district had a grant, Jim was involved in that accreditation process when I was first up in Washoe County, and has been a stalwart. That probably wasn't pronounced correctly. Stalwart. During this entire process, I'm embarrassed myself by implying he was a wart, but excuse me, he is not. He's been essential to this process going forward. We're happy to have him stay on in this quality performance management kind of role, and then he will be leading us through, if he stays so long and the rest of us are here so long, through the re-accreditation process. Jim?
Thank you, Dr. Iser. Members of the board, for the record, my name is Jim Austey, and for 14 years I've been with the district in two different roles. I originally hired on as a grant writer and librarian. I'm the only librarian the district has ever had. And for the last 12 and a half years, I've been an administrative analyst in two different divisions. I've worked in environmental health, and I've also worked in community health. and I'm very excited for my new role, which will officially start on February 5th as the Quality and Performance Management Coordinator, or as we're going to be calling him, the QPM. I heard a question from Tim Jones, which I would love to answer, and that was, what is performance improvement and how does this all fit together? NACHO has come up with an umbrella concept of performance improvement as a overarching view of how we change as an organization to provide better services and to deliver a higher quality of care to each of the individuals that we serve. Performance improvement is that umbrella. Under it are 8 component parts, and you've talked about some of those today. Accreditation is one of those components that will help us to improve. The CHA, or Community Health Assessment, the CHIP, Community Health Improvement Plan, the Strategic Plan. We have also Workforce Development Plan, which we are currently really reviving and adding to. One of the other things that's important to remember in performance improvement, and Emily spoke about, we're working on a health equity policy. Health equity is an important integral part of all of the activities that we'll be doing. It looks back at how do we overcome disparities in our community? How do we give every individual the chance for health, regardless of what their situation in life is? Another part of the overall quality improvement plan and part of my job description is quality improvement itself. And I will be leading the quality improvement efforts of the district so that we are assured that we put into action those quality improvement methods that are proven to be successful in public health. And one more piece to the puzzle, and a very important piece, one that I'm very excited about personally, is performance management. I don't know if you know anything about our website, Healthy Southern Nevada. I am a big proponent of that website. It has a lot of our data already on the website, and we'll have all of these component parts listed for our community to see in a very transparent way what we're doing as a district. So those are the component parts of a performance management system. I'm very excited that I'll be involved in all of those component parts, and that my job will be to shepherd us into a higher level of service for the district. And I would love to answer any of the questions that you may have.
Were you referring to the Get Healthy segment of the website?
Actually, that's another website that we have, Get Healthy Clark County. The Healthy Southern Nevada is a website that's sponsored by the Health District, and it is partly paid for by a donation from Dignity each year. It's $10,000 each year that they contribute to that website. And it's our forum for providing information out to the community. If you go to that website today, you'll see our original CHA and CHIP are listed on the website. And going forward, all of the performance information that I mentioned, all of those 8 component parts, will be listed on the website for not only the staff and the employees of the district, but also for our community to be able to see.
The reason I brought that up is we can talk about it afterwards, but as you move forward, your Get Healthy website, I've been using as a board member and as the representative on the Governor's Food Security Council to try and the council itself's mission starting 4 years ago was to reduce the number of food insecure people in this state. That website and the people who support it, who know me because I've been in here a lot to get direct information, has been used and was critical to get the after the bell, the school breakfast after the bell program. You guys should be getting credit for that in your accreditation process. It is recent, within the last 2 months, that website and the people who support that have updated it and have given me information that gives us programs for adult food insecurity. I don't know if you people know that we've got about, in the state of Nevada, approximately 550,000 people who are residents who are over age 60, and over 80,000 of them are food insecure. And the programs that we have in this state that help eliminate the social determinants of food insecurity, many of those have been documented by this health district. And all I'm doing is trying to make a link so that you guys get can document that, and I'll be happy to help you document it as you go forward for your accreditation process. And the Food Security Council is, as we talk, has your most updated links, and the people who've managed it have thanked us for it. So I just want you to know that, am I confusing, or I just want to make sure that you guys are, that we get credit for that within the district as you move forward, knowing, having been involved in accreditation processes with hospitals and with the American Academy of Pediatrics and all that stuff. Having that in your documentation is sometimes helpful.
With public health, we sort of sit right below, hopefully, the line of a lot of public, a lot of media. When we need media, we get it. You've seen me on TV. You've seen staff on TV all the time. But we, if we do our job right, we stay right below that line. And so when we get compliments like you just gave us, it's really, we really appreciate that. Dr. Osgood, thank you very much for that. I really do appreciate it.
Well, your information is absolutely critical, and I've been actively involved with that department for many, many years. Yes, question.
What are some of the main issues you plan to address in your new role in the community? The absolute main issues that are troubling you right now?
That's a great question. One of the things that I see in my role is to identify what are the key priorities for the health district to move forward, and that's a process that we've done in the past through our CHA and our CHIP. We had 7 priority areas in the original CHIP. 3 of those we were able to work on, but there were 4 other areas that we did not have an opportunity to really focus our attention on. When we start the CHA CHIP process, and I'm hoping that we'll launch on the process in July of this year so that we will meet that deadline of being in completion of that document by 2019, I think that we need to revisit those 7 areas to see exactly where our disparities are as far as health is concerned with our community, get that community engagement, get the board's engagement in those activities, and determine what our next set of priorities will be going forward. We'll have 3 years to work on those. We don't know what the funding situation is going to be like. It could be very tight funding-wise, with the federal government retracting on a lot of things. So we're going to have to focus our energies and our funding to maximize the impact that we can achieve. It will be, I think, a lot of discussion about what's the best way to utilize limited resources for the maximum bang for our buck.
And just for those that are unaware, what are the 4 other areas that had not been worked on?
Oh, I thought you were going to ask me that question. Let's see if I can pull those out for you. We had one which was injury and opioids. We had one on immunizations. The 3rd one that we did not address
I need to interrupt. It's not that we did not address these.
No, that's true.
They weren't a community priority. Remember, with the CHIP process, the community came together and prioritized these three areas. We would not be doing our job if we didn't focus on those others and all of the other things we need to do. So I apologize for interrupting you, Jim.
No, Dr. Iser is absolutely correct. We didn't stop doing any of these activities, but we focused most of our attention on the three that we did do, which was policy and funding. It was chronic disease, and it was access to health care. Those three we really pushed hard, and I apologize. I've got those posters in my office. I'll go run back and make sure that you all get to see those other two.
No, you're fine. For those that were unaware, I wanted them to know what the other four categories were.
We'll send those to all of you. I think that would be very helpful. And during this, I'm sorry to interrupt, but during this next process, the community members may choose additional items. So one of the things that always worried me was the opioids, because we knew that we have them here. Northern Nevada did choose that as one of their three priorities, and we have not ignored that. We actually put a lot of effort into that. We have a person who's dedicated to that, injury prevention as well, and some other areas. But the community, you all, helping to lead this process, which is what I hope you all will do, along with us, will bring the community back together and we'll start to reprioritize. I know, again, the three of you came to many of those meetings. Other ones of you have too, but you were pretty much there during all of the CHA and CHIP meetings, so you know that process, and that's generally what we'll do again. And I apologize, I tend to speak too much sometimes, but it feels like I need to explain certain things.
I'd like to encourage you to help lead this organization into becoming a high reliability organization. Came out of the airline industry, and now healthcare is taking upon about zero harm. So you can learn more about it becoming a high reliability organization, and I think that's, for futuristically, that's the direction we should go.
I've seen that. It's called zero something or other, and it's
zero
about traffic.
Zero harm. That's where the health
deaths. There's something called zero something or other that is about traffic deaths, but you're talking about something else?
Zero harm is in the healthcare industry, but I'm saying it came out of the airline industry,
yeah.
The high reliability organization, and manufacturing has it too, but I think that's something for the future, something that we can reach for.
Mm-hmm. And if I may add, we have this district wasn't up to date in virtually anything, and still is behind the times on certain things. For example, we've just contracted a couple months ago with an electronic health records system, and the hospitals and many community health centers have had that for a long time. We're implementing that now. So we're bringing ourselves up to date, but there are lots of internal processes and policies that we need to revisit. Emily and the team for accreditation has done a lot of that, but we have a lot more to do. And I'll just give you an example. One of the things is that when we open up a new position, how long does it take for the desire on the part of a division director to want a position refilled, and how long does it take to get it advertised and filled? And I don't think we have that data yet. I think we should have that data so we know how efficient we're doing and how we can improve the process. And that's just one of many, many internal examples that I can bring up to you.
All right. Other questions?
See any focus areas or challenges on types of personnel or skill sets that employees will need going into the next 5 years or longer that were not there yet today? Or
well, I can tell you one that I've already experienced myself, and that is the challenge of all new technology. We have a new enterprise resource planner, which is a software that does a multitude of different things, and it's very complicated and very challenging to the district, and staff are going to have to rise up to the occasion. We just had another little situation yesterday with it. It always presents itself as being a great tool, but it's hard to figure out sometimes.
I feel your pain.
And I'll just add in here too, we are incorporating the public health WINS survey, and part of that is to evaluate what our workforce is actually looking for in terms of their training, and we're incorporating that into our workforce development plan as well to ensure that our workforce does have the necessary skills We have an academic affairs coordinator who's actually helping, if you don't have a degree, to get you that next degree so that you can actually be updated on a lot of the new technologies that are coming out, the new ways of doing things, all of that. So that's definitely something that accreditation has helped with to get us to that point. And that's going to be, as Jim said, an ongoing role as part of that quality management to include whatever our employees are going to need to be able to most effectively do their jobs.
And I'm looking forward to being a standing agenda item on this board's agenda each quarter so that I will make a presentation for you. And the next one will be a formal presentation with some great slides for you to look at.
I was hesitant, but I'm going to make a comment about your IT development. You might, I don't know how to suggest, IT, when you, in the health industry, we know this in hospitals, we know these particularly in doctor's offices. The error rate far exceeds that of paper. And I suggest you monitor the error rate and decide how you want to progress as you introduce the IT, the electronic medical record. As I've shared with Joe some reports that with the Healthcare Summit research that we've done in the past that I was involved with nationwide. And I don't know if you people know, but John Hopkins some and the CDC did some research that was reported a year ago that the third leading cause of death in the United States today is health system errors, and a substantial amount of those deaths come from errors in IT. So as you might want to have an IT monitor for error rates or the equivalent.
Thank you.
Yeah, I said earlier, I feel your pain. We at UMC have just gone to a new electronic health record, and it's a nightmare. But they tell us that once we become proficient, it's going to make us a far more efficient machine. But thank you for all your hard work. So we're going to move on to the next item, number four. And let me introduce this. For the last year and a half, I've been working with a group of dedicated professionals and an alliance of nurses for a healthy environment. They do a lot of work in climate change, but they do look at the environment overall. They are, for the most part, public health professionals that have focused on in the area of climate change. I met with them last July at Georgetown University and for a four-day conference. And one of the things that came out of this conference is a Nurses Caring for Climate and Health video, and I'd like to share that with you right now.
I'm very proud to be a nurse. Nurses are unique. We're the ones in the closest day-to-day contact with patients, which may be why year after year, nurses are ranked as the most trusted of all professions. It gives us the chance to make a real difference for the patients and our community. Nurses have a long history of protecting public health, from Florence Nightingale, who first brought attention to the connection between health and environment, to Lillian Wald, who helped improve health conditions in New York City tenements. Making the world a healthier place is what we do. And now we're faced with a new challenge. Our climate is changing, and our health is suffering as a result. While climate change may not be everyone's top priority, nurses have a major opportunity to help our patients and our communities live healthier lives.
I've been seeing two specific impacts of climate change on health in my daily work: asthma and Lyme disease. Maine has one of the highest asthma rates in the country. 13% of our adults live with asthma. We're at the end of the Gulf Stream, so the air pollution from across the country is coming into Maine. We've had an immense explosion of ticks this year. Normally, the ticks die off in the winter, but that didn't happen this winter.
As a former public health department director, the impacts of climate were apparent all around us. With extreme weather changes, we had increased flooding. We had seniors that had high rates of heat stroke.
In southern Nevada, the length of our summer is longer, the heat days are more intense. The thing that I've seen is an increased number of respiratory illnesses, bad exacerbations of COPD.
As I think about climate change, I think about the bigger picture. If we don't take action now, we don't know what the future will look like.
I feel it's a moral imperative as a nurse to address it, not only for the health of our children, but also for the future of our children.
No matter what kind of specialty you're in, your patients are already being impacted by climate change. As nurses, we have the power and opportunity to step up and take action on climate solutions. Here's what you can do. Get informed. Find out how climate impacts health, how solutions protect it, and what you can do.
I think that as a professional nurse, it's incumbent upon me to try to educate myself as much as I can about the things that impact our patients and the environment that we live in. You don't have to have any expertise, just be willing to learn as much as you can.
Lead by example. Spread the word.
The Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments has really helped me to communicate in effective ways with policymakers, local community members.
4 million nurses working together can do amazing things. And now is the time for us to act.
We can come together and make it possible for our children, our grandchildren, for future generations to enjoy this beautiful planet we live in.
Don't ever forget that you're not alone on this issue, that we stand shoulder to shoulder to address this issue of climate change and health.
The Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments is a network of nurses from around the country helping to integrate environmental health into our education, workplaces, and practices. Through our partnership with Climate for Health, we want to inspire and empower every nurse in America to lead on climate change. Take action now by joining our alliance and getting your own nursing organization involved with addressing climate change. Check out the communication resources at Climate for Health and learn how you can be a part of the solution.
Okay, I just wanted to share that with you, and I want to put something out here that I wasn't aware of until this conference, is that one of the biggest offenders in this climate change environment that we live in are hospitals. And I was totally unaware of that. Emissions from hospitals contribute a high density of greenhouse gases. So, any comments?
Good job.
We have not, as a district, been able to fully engage in climate change issues. Again, we're a poor state, and we're relatively poor as a district in terms of the amount of public dollars and the percentage of public dollars that flow into us. So there are a lot of things that we need to address, and we've started to look at some of the climate change issues. And I think in particular is vector control kinds of issues that was implied up in Maine. I was just up in Minneapolis this last holiday season, where the temperature high was 0 degrees, and they were thankful for those very low temperatures because there's several parasites that destroy forests. Ash borer, I think, is the one up there. And with the relatively mild winters that they have, the ash borers have been destroying the forests. And this winter will control that because it'll freeze them. They can't survive this. Where we have a little bit of a line here in southern Nevada is where the Aedes aegypti mosquito can live and thrive, and it's really right at about our northern border, because the other counties north of us do have hard freezes, and the Aedes mosquito doesn't like that. It's a more tropical. They don't love us because we're dry, but they don't care if there's a teaspoon of water, they're going to breed in it, and so we've been unable to completely eradicate that.
with climate change, that's going to head farther north. The diseases that are kind of maintained along the Texas border, dengue and several others, as the Aedes aegypti mosquitoes continue to do a more northern trend, dengue is going to start showing up. And as bad as Zika is, dengue is, in my opinion, I mean, it has different side effects, is worse. And yellow fever could make a comeback. There are a variety of other diseases that we have to worry about. The other piece just to mention to you is that sort of part of this, but much broader than this, is a concept called environmental justice. And what that means is, for example, where are power plants located? Well, gosh, they're in the poor, mostly minority communities, wherever they are located. Where are highways located? Mostly in poor minority communities. So where are the asthma cases that you mentioned in the video? It's along that highway corridor where, if you watch I-15 going north, that goes right through a significant African-American population. So environmental justice is something that NACHO, and in particular the Big Cities Health Coalition, of which we're one, is part of. And so we have put, I'm on that committee for environmental justice, and we've put together some fact sheets related and program resources related to lead, which generally is in poor, older housing, that we at the Big Cities Health Coalition are putting together. And we're putting together another fact sheet that that will, the front part gives general environmental justice issues, and the back part is where every local health authority can put in what they have. We don't have a significant of a lead problem here because we destroy our old housing. That's not, I'm exaggerating to make a point. We do have a lead problem here, everywhere does, but not like some of the older industrialized cities in the upper Midwest and the East Coast in terms of lead and what happened in and around Detroit and Michigan. But every jurisdiction has something related to environmental justice that we hope that every health department will start to address, including climate change. I feel like I need to apologize because I wax on sometimes, but I wanted to let you know, Mr. Collins, that this is where we are right now, and the rest of the board, too.
I'll just take it a little further than what you did. if it's as we move forward as an advisory council, and as you move forward with the next CHA, if issues of climate change, which I happen to agree are critical for health outcomes, we might want to consider having the health district sponsor a symposium to introduce the subject. If you do, I don't know how many of you know, but one of the scientists who did the original research documenting climate change in Antarctica happens to be at UNLV. Peg Reese, I think she's still there. She was the geologist who published the original papers umpteen million years ago documenting the beginnings of climate change. And she might be a good person to participate in such a kind of a introductory seminar to introduce the subject. Just wanted to suggest it.
Also, the two women that are the primary coordinators for the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments, they are in touch with a very wide-ranging community of physicians, people at NIH, health districts around the country, and they are very, if you need any information whatsoever regarding climate justice they can make that available to you.
Thank you.
Even to the extent of if you need them to come to Southern Nevada and help with the project, they can do that as well. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, so Let's go ahead and move on to item number five, discuss and approve recommendations for the Southern Nevada District Board of Health, January 25th, 2018 meeting.
What I have from this meeting so far is that you agree with the Board of Health recommendations for chair and vice chair, and that there's discussion on this board about climate change and, if I may add in, environmental justice as topics that we should try to look forward to addressing as we can and as resources allow. Those are the two that I take out of this meeting. Do you have other things that you'd like me to take back?
I would just say also a recommendation that we see excellent progress toward accreditation and that things look to be in great order, and commend you for that effort.
Thank you.
Is there any other action item that we're going to, that we as a board or individuals on the board are going to need to do before the site visit?
I don't believe so.
If Emily? There is, let us know.
The only thing that we would ask is that once we get you some information to review, we'll probably put together a fact sheet just so that you can have some reference information. And then once we know the date of our site visit, we'll coordinate with everybody so that you can either meet with me or one of the other accreditation team members, so that when they come and ask you guys questions, you know what you're going to be saying. We won't leave you out there hanging.
And Mr. Collins, if we can have a motion from the board and a second on those three items to take back to the regular Board of Health, I'd appreciate it.
I so move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move on to item number seven, health officers and staff reports.
So mostly what I wanted to discuss you is sort of where I would like to see us go and where the trends in the United States are going, more or less, and some issues that I think we need to address. So one of those is our neighbors to the north in terms of rural health. We've discussed with you the use of our mobile van in terms of trying to address some of the clinical issues that they need up north. So we have been working with Dr. Antonina Capurro, who is the state dental health officer, dentist for the state, and then with Amy Rookie, who just recently resigned, to try to get some funding for us to use our mobile services van outside the county. So the mobile services van is paid for, and I'm not asking for rent for that, but I'm asking for gasoline and then for our staff to travel with Dr. Capurro's staff going up to rural areas to provide some services. Our services would start out being basically immunizations. Their services would start out being basically fluoride rinses and sealants, because outside of this county, there is no fluoridation, as I think you all well know. And we, as a team, see that the state and Dr. Capurro and I see that as a need. So we look. It looks like we have gotten enough resources to do sort of two trips, one up to the northeast, one up to the northwest as far as Goldfield, and one to the northeast as far as Ely. And these jurisdictions are closer to us than they are to Carson City or Washoe County. And so those two local health authorities have said, Joe, do what you want with them. But they know what I'm doing. What I mean is in terms of trying to help for this clinical services. So we have had one meeting with full support with the Nye County Board of County Commissioners. I think it's, is it this week, Ms. Wells? We have a meeting with White Pine County up in Ely and their Board of County Commissioners to try to get the same buy-off. In the following week, we have a meeting with Lincoln County and their Board of County Commissioners. And then we have been in contact with the commissioners, or one commissioner from Esmeralda County, who is again sort of within that range, because we'd like to go up to Goldfield. And so we're waiting to hear when we can do a presentation to them. And given their approval and their in-kind support, and what we're asking for is security, them determining where we should physically locate the trailer, perhaps some help on the ground, being able to hook up our electricity to their county building, county services building, wherever they want us to go, and some other things, then we'll end up going. So the agreement so far is a handshake with the state for the finances, but with Dr. Capurro, we're taking that agreement for co-locating dental health resources and us that will be broader than just this initiative to the Board of Health this week. What Dr. Capurro also has been interested in is putting in a dental chair here, maybe at East, and then if we can ever develop a much broader thing for North Las Vegas, is perhaps doing a dental chair up there. And then they would assign a dental hygienist to us and or provide us the funding to do that. So it's not just oral health for the rural counties nearby, but for us as well. That's one big initiative that we see happening in the very near future.
Would the UNLV Dental School be a prime resource?
Dr. Capurro is co-located. She's with both. So yes.
Seem like they got staff and
they do.
Resources,
yes.
There.
So Dr. Capurro used to be full-time faculty there, and then she took the state dental health position. So she's funded by the state but located at UNLV. So that's and we are developing an educational program, an educational agreement with the dental school as well. So that's a little bit broader than what Dr. Capurro and I currently are taking to the board, but yes, they are involved. The second one is that we're in the process of applying for a residency program through the Health Resources and Services Administration for general preventive medicine and public health. So that is a medical specialty equivalent to family medicine, equivalent to pediatrics for public health professionals. So we have an agreement with John Gerstenberger as the MPH portion of that. It's a one-year program that does their internship in family medicine or pediatrics or internal medicine. So they do their clinical year there, and then they apply to us. They do their MPH year, if they don't have an MPH, with Sean, Dr. Gerstenberger, and then they come to us, and we are developing partnerships with the state, with Washoe County and others, for potential rotations where these residents would then rotate through TB, through STDs, through epidemiology, through environmental health, to get a full-fledged experience in what I do on a daily basis, and that is to help to look at how public health systems are organized and services provided. The state has never had one of these. When we looked at the Board of Medical Examiners, there are 38 who identify as GPN public health, none of which are, in terms of being board trained, residency trained or board certified. So Emily, who you met, has done that research to go to the American College of Preventive Medicine and then to cross-check who they say is in our state, who is GPM PH board certified against the names that self-identify. And there are only two in the state. Dr. Leguin is one of them. Well, there are only two in this state who are in the Board of Medical Examiners. Dr. Leguin is one of them, and I am the other one. So what we plan to do is to upgrade the profession of medical public health so that in the future these positions would be eligible to be the state health officer or the medical officer to support public health departments throughout the state and honestly throughout the region. So that's one of our big initiatives. And hopefully by Wednesday, we'll have uploaded the grant application and we're applying for accreditation at the same time.
Do you guys have to be affiliated with the university?
No.
You don't? They've eliminated that from 30 years ago.
No, they actually, as far as I know, they never have.
Oh, they did when I was.
Oh, okay. So what
enough.
We did.
Fine.
I'm sorry.
Good.
So what we did was, as you know, I used to work in California. California Department of Public Health has a residency program. I know those folks. They sent me all their material. We edited, copied and pasted where we could, and edited really significantly their materials for their accreditation program, not for their grant, but for their accreditation program. So hopefully we'll be successful. We hope to upload the grant this week, Andy? Wednesday, and then the accreditation application by early April or late March. And if we don't get accredited, they'll give us advice on what we still need to do. The third thing, and we've talked about this quite a bit, is the FQHC, and there has been some resistance on the regular Board of Health going forward with us becoming, applying for, becoming an FQHC, a federally qualified health center, or a HRSA designated Medicare, CMS identified primary care organization. And if you look at the amount of HRSA dollars, Health Resources and Services Administration dollars that come to the state, we're very underserved, and that's because we have very few community health centers here and a whole lot of underserved areas. So we're in the process of looking at that. I've talked to Richard Whitley about getting a planning grant from him to help us look at making this transition. And again, under Dr. Legan, who's sitting behind me on my right, we would be, given board approval, we'd be going forward with an application to become an FQHC.
We've never, the district has never had that designation before?
No.
That's strange. When I was doing some work with the HIV folks back when we got the Title I grant, the clinic at UMC was identified as one, and I thought that the clinic here was one, but that's not.
No, I don't believe so. So the lead clinic might have been an FQHC when UMC owned and ran it, because it was a primary care clinic. I'm not sure what the status of that is now. But we don't do primary care. What we do is categorical specialty care as defined by our grants from CDC and other organization like Family Planning, the Office of Population Affairs.
We got that grant, and it must have been based on the hospital's qualification, but it was for the entire community. And we had an affiliation. We had a physician that worked at both it was the wellness center and here at the health district. And I thought that when we wrote the grant that they identified the health district as the clinic here in the health district as a primary care.
So then if you can find that may be helpful to us, but I don't recall that.
That was in 1999 or somewhere yeah. in there. So, but that
in our memory, we have never been because we don't do primary care. So an FQHC has to follow the model of a community health center. Mm-hmm. It has to have a board that exists of 51%. So if, for example, if you were the board, it would take five of you would have to be users at our clinic in terms of coming here for services. If it were the regular Board of Health, which has 11 members, that would be six. You have to also have a sliding fee scale, which we do. You have to deliver primary care. You have to deliver some sort of oral health services, have a pharmacy, have some sort of behavioral health services, and we don't have all of those components yet. And you have to have a tie-in for hospitalization for your patients. So Dr. Legan and I do have that because some of our insurance companies mm-hmm. require it for us to be reimbursed, but we never hospitalize anyone here. But we would have to have an agreement with a primary care provider or hospitalize our own patients in order to qualify.
Mm-hmm. So when you under the Affordable Care Act, you got the electronic health record up and going, and you charge for certain services, and that doesn't qualify you as okay.
No. Some of our grants require that we charge for services. For example, the Family Planning Grant used to be free services for everyone. They now require that we do an assessment of every patient and charge appropriately either the insurance company or fee for service for them. So we have some grant programs that require that. what we're looking at is, what we're looking forward to is a couple of things. One is all of those added things that we can add on to, like Dr. Kapurl's oral health care as part of our dental services, but also the enhanced reimbursement, which is one of the benefits of being an FQHC provides. So if I am a physician in private practice and I see Medicaid, I get, I'm just going to make this up, 30% of my allowable charges is what Medicaid will reimburse me. But if I'm an FQHC, I do an assessment to say, how much do these services cost me? And it might be 50% of the allowable Medicaid payment. So we would get 50% of that allowable charge for Medicaid, which is higher above and beyond what a private provider would get. That's probably the biggest benefit to us. It allows us to expand our services. It allows us to pay for people who otherwise can't pay, undocumented immigrants, for example, or people in transition without health insurance.
And Dr. Oz, forgive me because this may have went way over my head, but earlier on in your dialogue, you mentioned that you're getting pushback, opposition from the Board of Health. You laid out great reasons as to why we need this. So if we need this, why are we getting pushback from the Board of Health? I have my assumptions, but I'd like to hear from you.
Yeah, so let me be very generic. I think that there is a worry that we may overextend ourselves in our financial obligations. Dr. Legan has gone through and looked at the actuarial piece. So what proportion can we expect from Medicaid of patients? What proportion of patients can we expect from private insurance? What proportion can we get from no pay or very minimal sliding fee scale pay? And it looks like we can afford this, but the full Board of Health is a little bit worried because of the amount of money that we get. You know, we get far fewer dollars than health jurisdictions in other states from our local tax base or from the state. And I think that's part of their worry. I'd be happy to talk to you privately about other concerns they may have, but we do see movement on the Board of Health. So, for example, Mr. Black from North Las Vegas is, I'm just going to tell you what I think he believes. I think he's very supportive of this. I think some of the other folks on the board are very supportive of it. And I think it's just an ongoing discussion that we started, I'm going to guess, a year and a half to 2 years ago, that we need to continue to bring forward the benefits to the people here. And if you look at huge areas of North Las Vegas, East Las Vegas as well, there are people who are who have Medicaid but don't have good access to a primary care because either there aren't any people, any physicians up there who will see them, or they don't take Medicaid. And so we think that instead of just being the safety net for the safety net, we can start to inch up and be part of the safety net itself, as well as the other piece. So by safety net for the safety net is that's what family planning, that's what STDs, we're the safety net for the community health centers and the primary care physicians here. We want to do more for our community.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I remember how that whole thing went now, that we had a Title III under the Title III grant from Ryan White, and that qualified us to go for the Title I, and then the health district administered it.
Yes.
Okay, now I remember.
And if you, for those of you who know what Northern Nevada Hopes is, mm-hmm. that started out as an HIV-only clinic, yeah. Expanded into hepatitis C, okay. Which is another blood-borne disease like HIV. Mm-hmm. And then what they did is they got a planning grant from HRSA to look at becoming an FQHC, community health center, and then they applied for the community health center dollars, and now they are, yeah. If you ever go up to Reno, look up Northern Nevada Hopes and look at their building that they built with HRSA funds, primarily HRSA funds. It's absolutely beautiful. It's a clinic facility. It's a community building. And that's where we hope to be able to go.
Okay. All right. So that brings us to item number 8, the second public health public comment section. Is there anyone wishing to bring public comment at this time? Okay. Doesn't look like we have any public comment, so
move to adjourn.
Yeah. Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much.
What is the date of our next meeting?
Michelle. Approximately 3 months. Have we sent?
No, we had a list for the entire year, but then that got, will that be affected by the change of this meeting?
No.
No, okay. So I'll you still have
it. I have it in my calendar, I think.
Yeah.
And if you wish, Michelle, can you send out, if you haven't already? It should be on your calendars if you accepted our invitation. This was an anomaly because of posting requirements. Oh, yeah.